On today's episode of The Good Work, Chris Herring joins us to discuss the biggest surprises from the early part of the NBA season, including the 15-0 Cleveland Cavaliers, Nikola Jokic going Thanos on the league, and the not-as-bad-as-you-think Detroit Pistons. And is it time for Milwaukee to find a new home for Giannis? All that and a lot more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. Today, we are joined by a first-time guest of this podcast, a longtime admirer for me, my man Chris Herring, author of Blood in the Garden, the flagrant history of the 1990s New York Knicks. If you see me on YouTube, I am holding up the book. It is now available in paperback. He is a senior writer for ESPN. We happen to share a very important day in December that's coming up very soon. And unfortunately, we are both Michigan football fans. How you doing, Chris?
Nah, man. You can't make it to your producer's point. It can't be that unfortunate because we're still the defending champs. And I'm going to ride that till the wheels fall off because of the way this season is playing out. But I'm good. For the most part, I'm good. I really appreciate you asking. How are you?
Nah, man, we're good. Look, man. Look, we are geared to make the best of whatever situations that we are in. Like, that's what this is. And this book, if you haven't read it, it has so much detail. It is rich in all of the 1990s New York Knicks. If you guys remember that era, that's, of course, you know, Ewing and Oakley and Starks and, of course, Pat Riley and some of the drama that went in there. Like, Chris really got in the weeds of that. Because I talked to Mirren about her book on Hakeem Olajuwon, and that was
I have it right here, too. Yeah.
Love that book. Like, literally love that book. If I had the attention span enough to write one of my own, like, I would definitely try, but I don't think I'm that smart. So, we're going to focus.
You're selling yourself way short. If you have the attention span to read one, it's like, are you interested in your own stories when you write them? If the answer is yes, you could write a book. For you, at the level that you write, yes, you could. Absolutely.
I appreciate that. I take your word for it. Since we're not quite a quarter into the season, but I do think it's a good time to check in on some of the most surprising stories of the NBA season thus far. You know, players, teams, coaches, any type of storyline. I guess we're going to go back and forth. Chris, I'm going to give you the floor on your biggest surprise so far.
I mean, kind of until further notice, don't we have to plug the Cavs right there? I mean, we could be cute about it, obviously. And there's obviously really fun stories that are out there that we'll see how much longer they hold up. But the Cavs, as we speak, are 15-0, have looked the part. It's not just that they're fluky or anything like that. A team that has not a ton of playoff accomplishment, but enough. And a team that is coming off a coaching change, which stylistically will change you and kind of potentially make more of you and kind of make you more than the sum of your parts. That's exactly how they've looked so far to me, is that Kenny Atkinson, they have bought into what he's preached. They have not even been fully healthy. Max Strus has not played yet, which is another plus from where I sit, that they, you know, can be even greater than what they are. But, you know, I think a lot of us were down on Darius Garland last year. He's healthy, looks different, looks more confident, has the guys buying in. It's, you know, it's not the best defensive backcourt, but they're buying in there. It's a team that is playing at a much faster pace, that is moving the ball better, and that, you know, sneakily over the last 2-3 years, I think really the last 3 years, even before Mitchell was there, has always had pretty good net ratings relative to their record.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, when you plug potentially a coaching improvement in there, or, you know, someone that can just make better use of what's there, you can have a monster. And, you know, this is a team that I've gotten a chance to watch them play in person twice at this point. But in watching them, you see the confidence, you hear them talk, and it's like, there's no reason we can't do this. And so from that standpoint, that is the first team that jumps out at me. Just, you know, again, until further notice, they've got a game against Boston coming up, which is really, really fun and will be must-see television for that purpose, because as of now, this is the second longest streak we've had to start a season for a team to be undefeated. And that's honestly pretty cool. And I don't know, as good as Cleveland has been the last couple of years, I don't think anybody expected this or was like looking out for this to be the case.
Chris, it's funny. because everything that we talk about when we talk about the NBA, and part of the reason that some of the discourse is so bad, is that we don't celebrate some of the things that we see in the regular season. Like, everything has to be framed in, can this team win a championship within like these confines? This team is just fun. Like, you can just ride the wave of whatever this is, 15-0. Like, they were a really good team last year. Remember, 48 wins. They got to the second round. Donovan Mitchell missed a lot of time in that second round series to the Celtics, so you knew they didn't really have a chance. And you'd be wise, or even fair to say, how much better can they be when you have two small guards and you have two skinny centers, by and large? And one thing that's really impressed upon me, or three things that really impressed upon me, even before we get to Kenny Atkinson, is Darius Garland and Evan Mobley growing together at the same time. Teams usually don't have the real estate for two young players to grow at the same pace or to grow together. Usually one grows at the expense of the other. And for people who have listened to this podcast, I'm a big believer in Evan Mobley. Like, I was a believer in him from the day that he was drafted. I saw shades of Tim Duncan. He doesn't have the Tim Duncan base. Like, he doesn't have, like, that strong, you know, just girth and mass. And you don't think of Tim Duncan as, like, the biggest dude, but you weren't moving Tim Duncan off of his spots, by and large. Evan Mobley, they're trying to turn him into more of a three-point shooter, and he's shooting a little under two a game, shooting a little under 38%, which is probably about as good as you could expect someone with his physical profile to play and skill set to play like. The thing with Donovan Mitchell that catches me is, it takes a lot for a superstar level player to willingly take a step back for his teammates to grow. Like, this is a career low for him in terms of scoring, right? Career low beyond his rookie year. His rookie year average is like a little under 23. But since he's been this 25, 27, 28 point scorer, this is who he's been. Chris, the crazy thing to me is, it's like, okay, if we're down in the fourth quarter, Donovan, you can take over. And I think that's a big show of maturity for someone to say, okay, I'm going to back off, I'm going to facilitate, I'm going to be, you know, almost a decoy, a ball mover, a connector. And then in the fourth quarter, if I don't have a rhythm and you guys need me, I'm still going to take over. I think he scored 13 in the fourth against Philadelphia, a win. 10 in the fourth quarter against Chicago, a win. 15 in the fourth quarter against New Orleans, a win. The theme is that they're winning right now. You know what I mean? And I think we should give him a little, I won't say a little credit, but I think attention should be paid to that, because that's not easy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you have to start a lot of these MVP conversations with someone like that. I mean, you know, Jason Tatum, I'm sure, would have loved more MVP love in the past, but this is the sort of thing that his supporters point to, is that, well, if my team is winning the most games and I'm the best player on the team, where's my award at, sort of thing. And Donovan Mitchell has kind of been, you know, when you consider how young these guys are, like the elder statesman, he's certainly the most accomplished of the players they have. And he's kind of been the one beating the drum saying, like, I've always thought this could work with Darius Garland. It's kind of the media and, you know, members of the fan base. The day that I saw them in person for the first time, they were at MSG against the Knicks. They had a beautiful come from behind victory. Darius Garland played his tail off in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter. And Donovan Mitchell essentially said, for the people that said that this wasn't going to work, that Darius was trash and blah, 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 blah last year, stay over there. Like, we're good over here. We trust this. We see what it is. This is probably the best run of basketball we had together. They were, I think, four games in to their season at that point. It was like pretty loud, brash, like, we're for real. We know that we're for real. We've bought in. This is not what is impressive to us. What is impressive to us is developing the consistency to do this. And then also, when we have a game tomorrow, that we don't use the idea of it being a back-to-back as an excuse. So that was really striking to me, just kind of the way that they were talking about this and thinking about this, is that it was not a four-game thing, that they have the ability to look beyond that. The other thing that I'll point to with this group is that last year, when you look at the season they were having last year, they were in a tough spot. They had a lot of injuries last season. Particularly Darius Garland and Evan Mobley were both hurt at the same time. And out of nowhere, they took off and started playing really, really well. And J.B. Bickerstaff, to his credit, said, look, we're not going to win the same way when we're missing two of our stars as when we have everybody. So from where I sit, we need to take more chances and take more risks. And to me, that means moving the ball more, playing with more pace, and shooting more threes. And it was a winning strategy for them, where I think they won something like 15 out of 18 or 19.
Yeah, it was something crazy, yeah.
It was weird, and my editors at ESPN at the time were actually saying, Chris, like, we want you to kind of take a deep dive into the Cavs and ask the question, like, are they for real, since they're doing this with kind of a fluky, like, not full strength sort of thing. And I wrote it up, and it was, you could immediately pick up on the strategic shifts that just were not the same as what they were before, and they were winning without two of their key guys. So the question became, when they all mesh back together, what happens? And they were, you know, kind of winning more at the pace that they were before, as opposed to that streak. It didn't really fit and mesh together that well. So Kenny Atkinson, I think, focused on that. He focused on a couple years ago of the fact that they were, I think, 2 years ago, like the eighth ranked offense in the league, really good net rating. And they did that while passing the ball a little bit more and with a better three-point rate than what they had last year. And so I think he took all that, kind of synthesized it, and told guys how he wanted them to play this year. Brian Windhorst had a story today that is a big feature piece on ESPN.com about the Cavs, and I think spent some time with them. And what he essentially told them, too, is, like, we're going to play fast. Like, we cannot be this walk-it-up sort of team when we've got a guy like Evan Mobley that can actually run the floor. They're letting Evan Mobley lead the breaks. They're letting Evan Mobley be the ball handler in pick and rolls. He's already had more possessions this season being the lead ball handler in a pick and roll than he had all of last season. So there's some really big stylistic differences with this team. But in having them play faster, he's like, we're going to play you in shorter stints. We're going to play you less minutes per game, but we've got the depth to do that. And it's, you know, to your point of Donovan Mitchell and how he's taken over in fourth quarters, that's what that is supposed to help with, is that you've got more energy at a time in the game where other teams are spent, other teams are huffing, and you're out there, not necessarily fresh, but, you know, this is where we shine. And I've seen teams like that before. So I'm really fascinated by Cleveland. I think that they didn't seem that far away, frankly, before. Yeah. It seemed more like a mental thing, or like a we haven't been here before thing, and now they have. And so I'm not going to say there's no excuses, but it makes them a more legitimate contender beyond the idea of just like they've had a hot start to the season. I think they should be there all year.
They should be in the conference finals. Like, when you look at Philly, you look at Milwaukee, and maybe Orlando, you know, once Paolo Banchero gets back, maybe this is their time to sort of go through like a little bit of those rough patches through the playoffs as you try to grow into a contender. But when you look at the Eastern Conference right now, when you look at Miami struggling, you look at the Knicks struggling to sort of find their way, that interior defense for the Knicks, big-ass problem. Like you said, no excuses for Cleveland. This is a no excuse for Vinny, okay? You want to know what the no excuse for me is?
Let's hear it.
I had no idea Nikola Jokic could take his game to another level. Chris, I had zero clue. Zero. And because I think what happens is we check in on teams very early in the season, and then we kind of like fall back a little bit. We zoom back out. And we saw, oh, no KCP, Russell Westbrook is there. You know, Michael Porter Jr. doesn't look good. Jamal Murray looks a little sluggish. All right, we'll check back in with the Nuggets later because Nikola Jokic is going to do his thing. This is something totally different, man. like Chris, like, I'm big into like the history of the league and history being a guide. You don't really have players who have 5 year stretches like this, in terms of 5 year stretches of excellence. And then in the fifth year, raising your game to another level. Like Bird's sort of best stretch was a 4 year stretch where he won three MVPs. And then the fourth year was better than the third year where he didn't win MVP. And by the fifth year that his back started acting up, Magic Johnson won three and a four year stretch. And by the fifth year, you could see Magic started to physically slow down. And then 6 months later, we found out he had HIV, right? Not saying that those two things are necessarily correlated, but the 91 slowdown, Magic started to change his style because it's really hard to keep up that level of excellence, night-to-night MVP style, right? LeBron had four MVPs in 5 years. That's probably the closest to it. But in 2014, LeBron stopped playing defense, right? You just say that what it is. LeBron stopped playing defense.
You're not going to hear an argument from me.
Right. Michael Jordan, I guess you could say at whatever five-year best stretch you could say, there was a retirement at the end of it. The man stepped away. Nikola Jokic is not just leading the league in rebounds and assists, which is something we've never seen, but this is also a career high. 14 rebounds a game, nearly 12 assists a game on a team that we don't know if they can really shoot more than they're shooting well, right? They have been shooting well. He missed the last two games for personal reasons, but they've been creating great looks with Jokic there, in addition to him averaging nearly 30 a night. This is numbers that we haven't seen, and we talked about MVPs with Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell. This guy's the MVP right here. He should be winning his fourth MVP, and color me surprised, Chris Herring, because I'm shocked that he's raising his game to another level, because I thought last year he looked tired at the end of that run. I thought he looked tired from carrying that dead carcass of a team, and I thought he was going to drag them to the NBA Finals, whether they wanted to go or not, except Rudy Gobert and Karl Towns said no. And I've never heard a phrase in my life that said Rudy Gobert and Karl Towns told Nikola Jokic no.
Hey, man. It is a fascinating dynamic. I mean, I love that you brought this one up, because how easy would it be to overlook the guy just because he's already won three? When we had kind of like a preseason thing that we had to do at ESPN for a lot of the writers, they had us chime in and they wanted our two favorites, dark horses, whatever it was, just pick two people for each of the major awards. And I looked through, you know, we had a Google Doc open for each of us to kind of see what we were picking, who we were picking. And I was like, am I looking at this right? I was like the last person to hop in the document. I was like, nobody picked Nikola Jokic. Like, is this, you know, and it's funny because obviously, if he's not one of the first eight people you mentioned for the possibility of this award, it is strictly a fatigue thing.
Yes.
In terms of whether you think he's going to be too tired, whether you're going to be too tired to vote for him or think about him or remember him, you know, and fair, right? Like if you think Calvin Booth is doing a terrible job and that the team is not going to hold up well enough around him in order for him to win, fair. Like, I think 3, 4, 5, 6 games in, that was kind of what it was starting to look like when we're looking at Russell Westbrook and how bad his numbers were to start the year. All of that is fair, but I guess the meaning behind all of it would be like, don't count out Nikola Jokic, because this man, like, I'm just pulling up his basketball reference page. He is shooting 564 from three. He's shooting 562 from two. And is shooting 563 overall, as you said, leading the league in rebounds and assists. Aaron Gordon has not been on the court lately. So there's that aspect of it. We were talking about the Russell Westbrook part, which generally speaking, he's gone to a handful of teams lately that have not really been able to shoot. You could add this one to the list. They replaced KCP. And shout out to Christian Braun, because he's played well.
He's actually played well.
Whether he was shooting well or not, he's played well. He's filled that role and bigger minutes better than I thought he would. But I think the biggest difference with Nikola Jokic, and why you absolutely can't count him out, obviously, why would you, from MVP, given that he's playing the best ball of his career, you know, for a stretch, he has led the league, I think, 6 years running now in terms of touches per game. Where he's averaged about slightly over 100 touches per game. This year, I think he is up at 115. He has increased his touches per game by 15% on this sort of volume where you're talking about this. These are the assists he's averaging, almost 12 per game. And to your point, his team can't shoot. So however many potential assists, I mean, I could look that up. I'm not going to break away from what we're talking about just to do that. But, I mean, this is next level stuff. And all of a sudden, it's not to say the Nuggets are all fixed and perfect and everything, but they were looking rough to start the season, and they have a winning record now. They're at 7-5. Maybe this has steadied the ship, but I get the impression from his touches and just the efficiency, the sheer efficiency he's playing with, that Nikola looked up after a couple games and said, oh, damn, I've got to do this by myself. I will. And that's not easy to do. It's also something that he has not always necessarily wanted to do because he's so unselfish. But you know, and he still is, obviously. You can't lead the league in assists, you know, and also be wildly selfish. We know that's not his game, but kind of like, okay, I'll do it if I have to, fine. And he's just a great player. You can't win three MVPs in four seasons, potentially four and five, without being one of the all-time greats. And I feel like that for so long has been the question of, are we really going to give this dude three in a row? And the fatigue argument that came into play.
Yep.
To be honest, if we're having to consider him for the award in the first place, he is. And I think he's already proven it, but this season is just kind of like a masterpiece for him so far.
It is time to start including him in these conversations with Jabbar and Shaq and Olajuwon. And it doesn't sound like, it, in your mind, it doesn't sound like, because he doesn't necessarily fit the archetype of what you think a center should look like for 50, 60, 75 years. We had a particular archetype of what we thought a center should look like and what we think, how we think a center should function. And he functions more like a point forward than he does a center. That ain't his fault. That's our fault for not recalibrating our eyes and seeing what's in front of us. Like, I'm looking at his win shares per 48, which is kind of the biggest indicator of MVP. He's at a 319 right now. He was never that high when he was winning MVPs. Like, this is my fear is that, hey, will he be able to keep this up? Will his fatigue allow him to be able to keep this up from carrying this very flawed roster? And secondarily, I don't know about you, but I have my own sort of, okay, to win MVP, your team has to be worth a damn, right? And by worth a damn, I mean, can you get to 50 wins? Mm. Not 60, but just 50. 50 to me is a, up until a point, was a reasonable baseline for MVPs. There was only one MVP that would play on the team that won fewer than 50 games or 50 games or fewer, and that was Jordan in 88. And that happened to be the year he won MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. So I can make an exception in that case. The back end of that is, with this new CBA, Chris, and everything else, I don't know if we're going to get dominant teams that are going to be winning 50 games year after year because of the tax aprons, and you're going to be losing players, and the floor is going to rise up. You're not going to have as many bad teams, but you're not going to have as many great teams on the top end. So maybe I have to flush that out a little bit, even to make an exception in this case, because Jokic is clearly the best player. But we're going to pause for a moment. We're going to come back with a couple of more surprises right here with Chris Herring on this episode of The Good Word. Back here on The Good Word with Chris Herring from ESPN. We're talking surprises of the NBA season. I'm going to go next. This is a bit of a surprise for me because I didn't see this coming. And we talked about J.B. Bickerstaff tangentially with the Cleveland Cavaliers and how they played last year, 48 wins, and then Kenny Atkinson has turned this thing up after they fired J.B. Bickerstaff. And usually that's the end of a coach's story, especially when you see that he leaves a team, the team gets better. It's an indictment on you.
Mm.
Luckily for J.B. Bickerstaff, that black man knew that he needed to keep his ass in coaching because he was not going to go to the broadcast booth, not with his, not sounding like Doc Rivers after every game. I don't know if you've ever been to a J.B. Bickerstaff post-game press conference. That man needs some lotion for his vocal cords.
Oh,
that
man.
Said, the Detroit Pistons won 14 games last year. This time last year, they were mired in a 26-game losing streak that sucked the life out of the city, out of the franchise, and out of the players. Yesterday, Chris, they won their seventh game. They didn't win their seventh game to game 50 last year. They are halfway to their win total. Kay Cunningham looks like an all-star. Jaden Ivey was playing behind Killian Hayes, who can't play dead, okay, last year because Monty Williams was not rocking with him. And this team is sixth in defense. For this team to be young and to have a few vets, the few vets being Tim Hardaway Jr. and Malik Beasley and Tobias Harris, like, this is largely the same roster with the exception of those guys sort of augmenting the young players. And they are playing so much better basketball. And they've given away three or four games this year, late game. Like, they are the cardiac cats of the NBA. I think they played the most close games of any NBA team. I think they played nine. I don't think any team has played more than eight. So far, they are my biggest surprise outside of you know, like the Cavs, because the Cavs were mine as far as the team. But how do you see them, mm-hmm. Chris? Is this regional bias for me? Like this team being in my backyard, and I'm so used to watching rat ass basketball that 500 basketball is getting me excited.
No, of course it's not. I mean, I think again, sometimes the stuff that is so magnified in the moment, just maybe it's the social media era. It's really easy for us to for it to be that story in the moment. But they were so bad last year where it was just so depressing to watch them play. Sure, they had games last year where they could hang a little bit. And first half, they've got a lead. And then second half, they lose it really quickly because teams are just like, all we have to do is apply pressure to the pedal. And we just
zoom past enough of this.
in part because you had Killian Hayes out there for long periods of time. When we want to talk about indictments, and I hate to do it to another black man. I hate to do it. But this, to me, feels like an indictment of Monty Williams. And I know that there were a lot of fans that felt that last year. Mm-hmm. I wonder what Monty's level of reflection would be about a lot of this. I know he couldn't have been thrilled. Again, depending on who you ask, people will feel differently. Couldn't have been thrilled at the decision. Probably was at least surprised by the decision, given how much money they'd committed to him for that to be after year one. But there were some really puzzling choices. And frankly, from a front office perspective, as you said, the roster's not that different. These were not like star signings that they had.
No.
There were people, I think, probably Detroit fans that were not thrilled at a Tobias Harris signing. But mm-hmm. I do think there's something to be said for just having adults in the room.
Yes.
To just have logical rotation choices and to have guys playing hard. Asar Thompson is not out there yet. This is a team that will be better at some point, either because they get used to what JB Bickerstaff is asking for. But just reading Jaden Ivey's comments after the win yesterday to put them at 7-8, it's a team that has some confidence from a team that had none last year. It makes a world of difference to not start out poorly. I was talking to some people sitting on press row at Madison Square Garden the last couple of days, and one of my favorite stories, one of the other surprises I had listed on my sheet here, was just how decent, not terrible, the bad teams have been, mm-hmm, generally. Mm-hmm. So Pistons, yep. Bulls, Hornets, I feel like I'm leaving somebody out. But, you know, when I had that conversation with people on press row the other
Portland
day.
Portland is a competent
Portland
team.
Portland beat Minnesota twice in a row and looked legitimate doing it both times. One of them, yep. They hit a bunch of threes, but they were also out playing and out hustling Minnesota. Brooklyn was the other team I forgot about. I've watched them twice this past weekend in person. So from that standpoint, what the people on press row were telling me is like, you know, you still have bad teams. They just don't know they're bad yet because it's so early in the season and they haven't lost the confidence yet. I really hope the Pistons don't lose the confidence because it's fun seeing a team that feels like they're playing for something. It's fun to see, like, Jaden Ivey was never a bad player.
No.
That was what was so weird about the Killian Hayes stuff. And I'll never forget, we were seeing this man's name in trade rumors because he was playing behind Killian Hayes. Like, do the Pistons not want him? And that was never, it was just so unfair, I feel like, to even have to ask that question and have to wonder about that, because this team always had more talent than what we were talking about. It doesn't mean everything is figured out. There's still moments right. Where you look at Jalen Duren and you're like, why is he making that choice? But he is a really talented player. Cade was never someone that you needed to be worried about. Like, was he actually worthy of a number one pick? Of course he was. Like, he is an all-star, the way you said. He might have moments. He still might not be the most efficient player in the league. But right. You see the makings of it there. You can't take over games the way he has in key moments without being the guy. And so it's made me really happy to watch them play. Well, it's made me really happy to see JB have a team. I was surprised he was the choice there coming off the sort of season they had because of the job he was losing with a relatively young, talented right. team. A talented right. team, which the Pistons were not all that talented, but it's made me really happy to see that he's making it work, at least early on, because this group, Detroit, I went to school out in Michigan. My mom was born in Detroit. I will always have a soft spot for teams that really struggle. I went to college during the Lions 0-16 season at U of M. I'll always have a soft spot for teams that really, really struggle in just an unheralded way. But I'm really happy to see them doing so well and kind of surprising people around the league so far. They could have had three or four more wins very easily.
Yeah, Jaden Ivey went from getting like DMPs basically to averaging 20 a game. Like, he is most improved player. Like, this is what the award is supposed to be. And even though he's in his third year, he is like the guy for me that says most improved player. So I'm going to go to you. What is your next biggest surprise?
Where do we go with it? You know what? Actually, we were talking about this before. So if we have a team that is surprising us in a really good way of like, wow, this was a historically terrible team last year. Now they're in the playoff race at the moment. They would be in the playoffs if the season ended today at 7-8. If we're talking about that, let's just stay in the East. Let's stay in the region, as a matter of fact. Milwaukee,
rip the Band-Aid off, Chris. Rip it off.
Milwaukee. Wow, Milwaukee. It's funny because if you talk about players and situations where it gets really easy to take someone for granted, and you talk about Jokic, you can't ignore the fact that Giannis has become one of those guys too. A guy that is going to average more than 30 a game. I think he has for the last 2 years. I think he's potentially doing it this year. He obviously had the 59-point game earlier this season. Is going to just as much as
against Detroit, Jokic
does.
He needed every last one of them points
overtime
in that rat-ass game.
Yeah. So, I mean, the same way that we talk about Jokic, it's like, fine, I'll do it if I have to. I was in the locker room when Giannis went off at MSG because they got blasted. And it was one game after they had just broken a 6-game losing streak where they get to feel a little bit good about themselves and exhale, you know, and 6-game losing streaks are not the norm, obviously, in Milwaukee when you have Giannis on that roster. They've spent big. They've kind of gone all in with this roster. Damian Lillard is on this roster. So the next game, Giannis decides he's going to go off with the media and say more or less, you know, like, are we going to play or not? Are we going to compete or not? Because if we're not, this is what it's going to look like. We just lost by 25 at MSG, 30 at MSG. We've got Boston in 2 days. And frankly, we're going to get blasted there too by 30 if we don't show up. Like, we can't just show up and think that that's good enough. That's not the case anymore. It's never been the case. I'm going to play, but who's going to come with me? And it was a loud statement. It kind of sucked, man, because I was thinking, oh, you know, the Knicks won easy fashion. Nothing particularly flashy happened during the game. I write for ESPN. I'm a national writer. I don't have to write a story off this. I can go home as soon as the interviews are over. And then Giannis kind of pounded his fist and said everything he said and swore. And I'm like, I looked right at Tim Bontemps. Like, I know I got to write a story on this now because Giannis made a big stink about it. But I say all that to say they were in a danger zone real quickly, man. Like, you know, and granted, this is a team that at 30-10 or whatever they were last year, decided to fire a coach in season. They brought in Doc Rivers, which means you probably don't have that card anymore. It's a small market team. They gave Doc a real contract. He's probably not going to see the axe fall on him. But also, you're in a situation where, like, who are you realistically supposed to move? Where we've seen them already a week into the season, all sorts of trade rumors with this team and that they're calling every team under the sun. Because they know that something needs to be adjusted. Something needs to be fixed. Middleton's not ready to play yet. That's just kind of par for the course for him at this point. But this is a team that can't defend anybody. This is a team that is watching a number of people really struggle to score and shoot the ball. And Giannis is still his same great self. Still playing as well as he ever has. Still really efficient. Hitting some mid-range jumpers. Like, not going to say he's really added to his game, but some of the things that we viewed as just fundamentally deficient with him are not. He's not the problem. The real problem is that this team can't defend. And, you know, on the night that I was covering them in person, Karl Anthony Towns had, I think, 3 or 4 dunks on Brook Lopez where he just blew past him, where he looks really slow footed. This is a guy that 2 years ago was second in Defensive Player of the Year voting. But Brook is old. Like, he's not a young guy. He's never been a quick guy. Even when he was in his prime or before that, was a guy that looked like he was, you know, playing slower than everybody else. And that, you know, had a new lease on life as far as his NBA career because of the 3-point shot and because, you know, he was able to play drop defense in that system. But really, the Bucks are a team that has run out of advantages. When they had Mike Budenholzer, they were among the preeminent 3-point shooting teams in the league. They were a team that was going to beat you to death in transition because of Giannis and everything that he can do. It was a team that was going to limit its mistakes enough and could basically beat you in every single margin under Mike Budenholzer. this is a team now that does not create turnovers ever. They're basically at the very bottom of the league in that. They are, I think, either worst or second worst in the league in offensive rebounding, so they don't get extra possessions that way.
Yep.
A lot of their guys, from Bobby Portis to Brooke in some cases, are not scoring well. Pat Connaughton is kind of a guy you don't even hear his name anymore as far as difference makers and when he actually performs
well. Shooting 35% from the field and 30 from three.
Yikes. So you're talking about that, and then the rest of it is a lot of young guys kind of filling in the margins. And Dame and Giannis are accounting for about 30 points a game. They're assisting a lot. But Dame is a turnstile most of the time. He's being challenged in the pick and roll more than any other player in the league. I've read a statistic that he's being challenged. His career high before this season was 7, you know, where he was the targeted defender in a pick and roll 7 times per game, where the play finishes where it's like they've either scored on him or taken a shot on him. It is up to 11 possessions per game this season. Where he is basically the most targeted guy in pick and rolls in the league. But it's because teams see it as an opportunity. They're basically like, if you were playing a game on the blacktop where you're basically doing this at Damian Lillard, where you want him. And that was the case last year too, but you would hope that that was ironed out, that you could fix it. But as we talk about slow-footed Brooke Lopez, and I still like Brooke. Like, he's still valuable. Yeah. He's still holding shooters 10 percentage points underneath their averages when they get to the rim. He's still doing his job fundamentally, but his job is made a lot harder when Dame can't stop anybody. And Dame's not getting younger. It was part of the concern that I think teams had with giving up the farm for him when he was on the block last year. So I think the dynamics of this team just shifted so much from when Drew was there. And that's obvious, right? But you would have hoped that an offseason would help some of that. Like, you knew what this team was with Dame. Dame is never going to be Drew Holiday, but even with Dame playing well enough offensively, he hasn't been great, but he's been fine.
Right.
The defensive part just fundamentally shifted what this team was. They have no advantages anymore. They foul a lot. They, you know, they don't offensive rebound. They're being outgunned from three by their opponents, and none of those things were true a couple years ago when they were not only a contender but a champion. And I just don't know how you put the train back on the tracks. Middleton, you love when you get him back, but how long will it be for? And will that be enough to make the difference? Your defensive needs are more important than your offensive needs at this point.
Well, the crazy thing is everybody's looking at Chris Middleton and saying, okay, when he gets back, everything sort of forms together. But he had double ankle surgery, and he had bad knees to begin with. So if this team lacks defense on the perimeter – and lacking athleticism. Like, that's the one thing that to me is very glaring.
Jumps out the screen.
It jumps out on the screen that they do not have athletes. And the athletes that they do have, Doc Rivers doesn't trust them because Doc Rivers does not trust young players. You don't bring in Doc Rivers to coach younger teams or teams that have youth that needs to be cultivated. You bring in Doc Rivers to come coach veteran teams that you're hoping that he can work his magic on to get guys to believe in him. And I look up and down the roster. Brooke Lopez is 36. Taurean Prince is 30. Giannis is turning 30 a couple days after our birthday. And let me tell you, Giannis, when you turn 30, the day you turn 30, you have shit that starts hurting that you didn't even know existed in your body, okay?
And Giannis is someone who's dealt with injuries, obviously, you know, the last couple of playoffs.
Yeah, and Giannis has Tibbs miles on his body. You know what Tibbs miles are? Like the car has, this used car has highway miles. It's just been driven on the highway.
CarMax. No,
it's got city miles with potholes in it and a couple car accidents that we just happen to patch up and fix up. Like, that, this is the back end of that. Chris Middleton in his 30s. Pat Connaughton, 32. Bobby Portis, sneakily, 29. So you don't have any youth to augment it. You don't own any draft picks that you can mortgage going forward. I don't think they own any of their draft picks for the next 5 years. Same thing with seconds. Like, when you have, it's like the gift and the curse of having a championship team or a team that's close to winning the championship, and you're trying to keep Giannis and keep him happy. You had to go get Drew Holiday, so you had to mortgage some stuff there. And you're trying to keep patchwork this stuff together, keeping the vets around. So you're shipping out first-round picks, shipping out second-round picks, because you want to stay part of the conversation, because you don't want Giannis to get a little itchy. And now you're on the back end of this where you don't have the roster flexibility. You don't have the assets to augment anything. And then the CBA just shifted everything underneath your feet where you can't just say, I'll pay the luxury tax and I'll just get exception after exception and vet man after vet man or add two or three guys and trade them into one. You can't do those things anymore. And now it's like Milwaukee is landlocked. So as we finish this off, the question I have for you is, and maybe I'm being unfair to you, maybe I'm being unfair to the Milwaukee Bucks here. Do we start talking about what a Giannis trade looks like?
They're not going to be the one to do it. But I imagine
they're 4-9 for those who don't know. And they got hosed. They got hosed in Charlotte. And the league did the whole, you know, Curtis Blair with the LaMelo ball tripping over his own feet and Giannis being called for a foul. They got hosed there. And nothing is better than Doc Rivers going off on the league after he got hosed. But that's one game. Yeah. I don't know about the rest of these.
Yeah, I mean, it's some of them have not been. I mean, to Giannis's credit, he called out the games where even prior to the 6-game losing streak they suffered, he was like, you know, we had games that we lost, that we were competitive, that we lost in the last minute or two. I can live with that because it's really hard to win games or even compete in games where you're not competing, like to be close enough to win them when you're not competing. That was why he was so angry when they just got the doors blown off at Madison Square Garden, where every player, every team likes to perform well. When you don't even have that sort of effort to give there, what does it say? So, sure, he can kind of, you know, crack the whip from the standpoint of what he's saying. Doc can try to push every button he wants to from the standpoint, because absolutely, when you're playing that poorly, you're going to want to make your voice heard about a bad call that costs you a game. And that happens. I get it. But again, I can't imagine the Bucks being the one to seek that trade out anytime soon. But I guarantee you other teams will be interested in what's happening there. But to your point, man, I know, again, Brian Windhorst very early on was like, the Bucks are calling everybody. Every team in the league has said they've received a call, more or less. But that's great. The Bucks don't have anything to trade. Like, they have a bunch of kind of stinky pieces right now that are not playing well, are not that young in a lot of cases. And really what this feels like, and I hate saying this, because you made the really good point with Drew Holiday too, that they traded a lot to get him. They mortgaged a lot to get him. And that was really the first move that stopped Giannis from having a wandering eye. And then obviously they won a championship right after. Right. And Drew Holiday has now had that happen twice, where he's traded and immediately after it happens, he wins a title somewhere else. So it speaks volumes about him. But the tax man, it just kind of feels like the tax man has come to collect with this team, because they've mortgaged so much, so many times. You traded for Drew. And then in order to get Dame, you traded Drew. It was not that he was part of the Dame trade, but then you had to move him right after to Portland. And then he got traded to Boston. You let go of Adrian Griffin, despite having a good record. And I get it that there were off-court concerns. There were chemistry concerns. Mm-hmm. There were things about the team that did not look tangible. You know, like things that might not have been tangible to everybody, but that the vibes weren't right. Even though you had a good record, which, okay, Cleveland did it. They fired David Blatt, and then they still won a title anyway. Sometimes it worked. Didn't work last year. And now, because you just did that last year, and then you signed Doc Rivers to a contract, and you're not a big market team, you don't probably have the flexibility to make that move again mid-season.
I got a team, Chris. I got a team. This is what it's called, a tease. I got a team. On the other side of the break, I got a team, because I'm wondering if this team will call the Milwaukee Bucks and ask the Milwaukee Bucks, hey, what about us? You're listening to The Good Word. We'll be right back with The Last Word. Back here on The Last Word, here with Chris Hang from ESPN. Chris, we were just talking Giannis. We were just talking the Bucks. So my last surprise is between two teams, and they're kind of both surprises in different ways. One is the Dallas Mavericks, because they lose every damn close game that they're in, right? This is a team that just went to the NBA Finals last year, and they look like they're paying the price. And it's not everybody else. It's Luka Doncic that seems to be paying the price, because everybody looks at him like he's Dame Lillard. Oh, we're not even going to call for a screen. We're just going to ISO you for game winners, or play you on the weak side and have Jordan Clarkson throw a pass like he's Magic Johnson for a dunk. Oh, that was ridiculous.
I still don't know what he was doing on that play.
Was he looking in? Maybe it was something nice in the stands or something like that that might have caught his eye. Right? Who knows? But here's the team that is. I'm going to ask Chris this. Chris, do you know who was the third best record in the West? What team has third best record?
Houston, right? Is it Houston?
The Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
Now, Houston has a bunch of young pieces. Mm-hmm. They have Ime Udoka, who, you know, shares some different things with Giannis Antetokounmpo. You got a couple vets over there. That team is hellacious on defense. That team has a lot of, you know, from the Jalen Greens to the Amen Thompson to Reed Shepard. Like, they've done some things in trying to make that operation competent, and now they are really turning the corner to being like one of these surprises. If I am the Houston Rockets, I am definitely calling the Milwaukee Bucks and saying, hey, we know you're not ready to do anything right now, but before you guys call the Oklahoma City Thunder, whenever that day comes, if ever that day comes, why don't you call us? Because I think Houston could be the next spot for a superstar who is disgruntled. Because we all hear the rumors about certain players who are disgruntled and aren't going to make it public because they can't make it public. But I'm curious if Houston could be this sort of fertile ground for the next guy.
Man, that would be fascinating. I mean, it's also not a small market, which, you know, also Giannis may not care about that, right? But it's interesting you're saying that. For a minute, I thought where you were going to go with it, for a surprise standpoint, was Golden State. Obviously, they wanted to be in on the Lowry market and stuff.
Yes,
and
they have
such a deep rotation that it's like you normally can't take a 12-man rotation, 13-man rotation 13. Into the playoffs. So, you know, but also, again, like, do they have enough to even trade? If you can't get in the Lowry market in conversation and convince a team, twist a team's arm into giving you that, you're not going to get Giannis either. But, man, we've seen Steph whispering in Giannis's ear before and whatnot. But Houston is fascinating. I mean, they are obviously surprising. I did not expect them to be this high up in the standings this early. But Ime Udoka, just kind of the way that he instills defense and the way that he has never been afraid to take his teams to task, it fits. It makes sense that they would be performing to this level, especially in year two for him as the coach. But also, one name you didn't mention that obviously is, you know, if not the most talented or the most skilled, Şengün is just such a good player. And was
Mention him because you're not trading him. That's why I didn't mention him.
Okay, understood. I mean, there's a couple guys that it's interesting. Like, you would have pretty good packages to throw out there. I mean, if you're gonna have Giannis, like, is Jabari Smith someone that you're saying, okay, because we have Giannis, like, if we're gonna get him out of it, do we need this? They've got so many forwards on this team that are really interesting, really young.
Tari Eason is quiet.
Tari Eason is nice. Man, it's a nice roster.
They got some dudes over there, Chris.
You would have to listen. I can't really fathom how bad it would have to get. I know 4-9 is the mark right now. I wonder. I feel like there has to be one other thing to happen. Like, is it something where, I don't know. Like, I'm just not sure what it would be. Is it the Dame has an injury or something where the bottom just really falls out? And I know that in some ways, like, if we're saying Dame is part of the problem from the standpoint of defense, like, maybe we've seen before where Jaw's out and Memphis actually has a respectable record because he just hurts them so much defensively, or has in the past, right? So, like, maybe there are aspects of that would be true. I don't know how they would replace Dame's offense. So, but I'm saying I think there would have to be one more aspect of this where the bottom just falls out of it, where it's not tenable anymore. And maybe it's because Giannis, when they've done things to bolster the team around him, he so instantly signs a deal to stay on, to lock in, that it would be really hard to picture Giannis in another uniform. But it also, that guy cares. Maybe some of it is acting. We've heard for years that people think that, you know, he wants to look a certain way and it's perception and image. But I've always got the impression that he really cares. I think back to that finals where, you remember that injury he suffered in the Eastern Conference Finals that year against Atlanta, where we were like, is he going to play again at all? And then he was back for game one of the finals. He had that crazy block on Ayton off the oop that that Booker tried to throw.
Best defensive player of all time.
It's really up there. Like, and you know, for people that'll say LeBron's chase down, fair. Like, I'm not going to debate you, but, like, just look at Giannis's play. Look at how late a jump he got on that pass and the play he made, and then he finished the series with the 50-piece at home. Like, he was not supposed to be able to play with that injury. But it gets back to what you're saying of, like, man, once you turn 30, those injuries get much harder to rehab. I was just having a conversation about that with someone at my gym the other day who's turning 30, and he's like, man, my wrist is still bothering me. Like, 6 weeks later, I was like, welcome to your 30s. But I don't know what it's going to look like. I just can't picture him in another uniform. But at some point, that does become a reality where teams are going to knock on your door. They're going to turn the tide and say, well, you've been calling us. What if we want to engage you on something? Because there's no fix for your situation. But meanwhile, if we took Giannis and put him on our roster, we would fix a whole lot of things. And that might be an answer at some point for Milwaukee. I don't know if it's this season, but if stuff continues to get dark, really, really, really dark the way that it is, and there are no other fixes, it's going to be a question that lingers for sure.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Chris Herring. That is a podcast, because we did not expect to go there into Giannis trade rumors and Houston Rockets and Golden State, but that's where we landed, and that's what happens when you have a podcast. My man, I really appreciate you. Maybe we can have Chris back on to do a deep dive for maybe a YouTube exclusive, where we're going to start doing more of those things to talk about this fantastic book, Blood in the Garden, The Flagrant History of the New York Knicks, or The Flagrant History of the 1990s New York Knicks. Let me get that title correctly. Chris, man, I really appreciate you.
This was really fun, man. I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thanks again to producer John and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this. Thank you, sir. If you haven't already, go subscribe to The Good Word with Goodwill wherever you get your podcast and leave us a rating and review. I'll be back on Wednesday with another episode of The Good Word. If you haven't heard, me and Chris are both on Blue Sky. Go look that up too, because we're going to try to migrate from the Muskie Man. Until then, everybody be safe.